The Final Furlan podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.
And Tote Plus will be providing you with huge value this weekend as we are ready for the weekend in the company of TalkSport 2's Lee McKenzie. It's only been an hour since I spoke to you, Lee.
Emma, it's lovely to be with you again. We are doing this sort of thing, well, I was tempted to say a bit too often, but you can't talk about racing often enough, can you?
No, you really can't. And a lot of fun. Weekdays, TalkSport 2 from 1 p.m. live coverage of racing and top-class coverage as well with brilliant guests too. So great having you on, having been on with you for the last 2 days, and on with you again next week on TalkSport 2. So looking forward to that. But for now, we're looking ahead to Saturday, and we'll start with the 7-furlong Tote Prestige Stakes, Group 3 for fillies, where the betting is headed by Danea? We go with Danea? Yeah, let's go with that.
Danea works for me.
Grand. Perfect.
The important thing with horse names you can't pronounce is say them confidently, and everybody else will think they've got it wrong and you've got it right.
Danea, 4-1. Hello, you, 9-2. Tinderbox, 6-1. Clitheroe, 7s. And Missancy, 8-1. A horse that I quite like, Wilderness Girl. Jesus Christ, 16s. For Andrew Balding and Kieran Fallon, 16-1 about Wilderness Girl. Your thoughts on the Tote Prestige Stakes, the 150 at Goodwood, live on Racing TV?
Yeah, I think you've got a point there about looking down the list here. We've got 11 runners, and you say about Wilderness Girl, and that was a big field that she ran in last time out at Goodwood, and she is potentially much better than we've seen so far. So if you were just going to go for the obvious ones there, then much further up the betting, you might not even get as far as Wilderness Girl. But look, Andrew Balding is having a terrific season, isn't he? He's even been talked about as a potential champion trainer this year. And I think she could surprise. But I'm going to go here much further up the order. In fact, you can't get any further than I've gone, which is to the favourite. I think she's an excellent favourite. In fact, I'm surprised she's not even shorter in the betting than she is. She looked good when she won on her debut at Kempton. And then second time, that straight into a good race at Deauville. And trainers, they don't send horses over to Deauville unless they think they're pretty smart. I know they're looking for French opportunities these days where the better prize money is. But a Deauville horse is a good horse. So I think She's clearly better to me than any of the others near the top of the betting. There could be one from further down that we haven't seen the best of yet. But for me, Danea is a strong favourite, and I think she'll win.
The thing about Danea is that she was very impressive at Kempton and showed a very smart turn of foot that day. And that run at Deauville was tremendously impressive. She also should improve for the good ground.
Because it was on the slow side at Deauville, wasn't it? As it often is in France, of course, because they do seem to water their tracks over there more thoroughly than we do.
They do like doing that. The David Simcock horse is by Ribchester. Cost. Here's a piece of business for you. So somebody bought the horse for £45,000 as a yearling, and then sold the horse as a 2-year-old for £590,000. Damn, those breeze ups are insane. This is Clitheroe.
Clitheroe,
right. So number 2, 7-1. Look, just because she costs that much money doesn't mean that she's going to go and win. The one thing I'd say about her, though, is that her, at least the way she traveled on debut, she traveled very strongly. She was in midfield. Jamie Spencer is booked to ride, so it's going to be a typical Jamie Spencer ride, and he's particularly good on these horses who travel really well. But I just kept coming back to Wilderness Girl, who has the course and distance form. Like you said, it was a big field that she beat that day. I just thought that there would be enough there that's Glorious Goodwood, and you don't tend to run a bad horse at Glorious Goodwood. In fact, we covered a Richard Hughes horse who'd run at the Glorious meeting and finished second and then won as a long odds on favourite yesterday. And he thinks the world of that horse and was disappointed the horse was beaten at Goodwood and just thought it was due to the ground more than anything else. My only slight doubt with Wilderness Girl is that she was beaten on debut on Good to Firm. But Andrew Balding's horses tend to come on for their debut run. And I think she'll be fine on Good to Firm ground, especially as a daughter of No Nay Never out of a pivotal mare. She shouldn't have any issue with the ground. And
yeah, it's lovely ground at Goodwood as well. They've got their own borehole where they keep their own secret supply of water straight from the clouds, and they get the water out of there. And I tell you, if you ever go to Goodwood, you will not go there and see like patchy ground, you know, spare tufts of grass growing out of the earth. Like, I'm not saying that you would see that at any racecourse, by the way, just in case any clerks of the course.
Oh yeah, of course, you've never seen it at any track.
But at Goodwood, it's particularly lush, and it's quite long grass as well. It was at the Glorious Meeting. It was beautiful just to look at it. You know, longer than you would have in your back garden. You know, if you had that outside your kitchen window, you think it needed a bit of a mow. But you know, it just looked so long and lush, not a weed in sight, and a lovely cushion for the horses to race on. So you won't find a ground with jar on it at Goodwood, even in a dry summer. And don't underestimate the value of a course and distance victory either, because it is a tricky track, isn't it? There are horses that go around there and there are horses that don't. And I think when you're running around a bend at Goodwood as well, you need a very well-balanced individual. And I've seen horses go there who have got impressive form on flatter, more conventional tracks, and they can't handle. OK, it's not quite as wacky as Epsom or, say, Brighton, but then there aren't many like that, are there? But it is a test of a horse, and if they've done it before, then for me, that is a big plus. So I do like your long shot there. And I think she's been severely underestimated here.
I think to me this is a tri-cast race, and obviously if you're going to be doing the place part, let me give you some very valuable information in a second. But Clitheroe, God, you have to be really careful with that pronunciation. Jesus Christ, Clitheroe, I think is going to run a big race here. I think she can improve an awful lot, particularly with the way she travels so well and travels so powerfully. I really like Wilderness Girl, and I quite like your selection as well. Danea, who heads the market, say it with confidence, Danea. So 4-1, and to be fair, the fact that Danea is favorite over Hallow You tells you a lot, because Hallow You ran a massive race behind Zane Claudette, again a race that we covered on Talksport 2 not so long ago. But Danea, Clitheroe, and Wilderness Girl would be.
It's interesting you mention Hallow You there, because she was also entered for the big auction race on the same day at York.
That's right.
And they switched her to run in the other race instead, which is obviously a more prestigious race and a harder race, although not as many runners, and a much classier race. And so they clearly think a lot of her. And she'll be a big player, I'm sure. And, you know, having acquitted herself pretty well at York last time out, I just think that she, in the end, she didn't quite show enough for me up against the likes of Danea here, who, and you say about Danea, the state of the ground, and you're talking too about the Andrew Balding filly Wilderness Girl as well. I think that whatever they ran on last time out, I think that Goodwood will suit them, because it's going to be a surface for all horses at Goodwood this weekend. I wouldn't be worried about after the race saying, well, that horse didn't win the race because it didn't like the ground.
Yeah. I don't think there'll be too many excuses in that regard. And Goodwood, by the way, I would fully echo one of the top commentators in the game, Lee McKenzie's view there. If you can get to Goodwood, now that Britain is open, if you can get to Goodwood, damn, it's one hell of a track. It's just some place to be. It's so beautiful. It's everything. Like, the fact that it's been built up in my mind for so long, that when I first went there in 2018 and then again in 2019, I really thought it's been so hyped up that it's not going to live up to expectations. It blew me away. I love it. It's stunning, and the surrounding areas are stunning as well. So Danea, Clitheroe, and Wilderness Girl are on our short list. Wilderness Girl would be my selection. Danea for Lee, and honorable mention for Clitheroe as well, who could wave goodbye to all of them. In terms of doing the play spot, if you are, you can do it tonight. as we're recording on Friday, you can do the play spot for tomorrow before 11:59 for the following day. And if you do this, then you can get your money back to a maximum of £10 or €10 should none of your selections place in the first race, which, of course, is not what we want, Lee. We want one of these horses to win, land the exacta, and possibly the trifecta as well for us. Thanks very much. Maybe the quinella. But if for some reason your selections, and you differ from Lee and I, don't place, then Tote will refund you to a maximum of £10 or €10 if you bomb out in the first race. Promotion applies to customers. First Tote place spot bet only, and the refund will be credited back to your account within 24 hours. Full terms and conditions are, of course, on the website, which are always super fun to read. I mean, terms and conditions, who can get enough of them? The next race that we'll talk about is the Tote Quad Pot Starts Here handicap at 225. Artis wins. Only question is, by how far? 5-2, buy-in money, how far?
Do you think trainer Clive Cox agrees with you? Because he also has Dance Fever in this race.
He does. With Adam Kirby on board. With Adam Kirby on board from Dance Fever.
What do you make of jockey bookings there? What's going on there? Is there a reason why they're that way around? I suppose Adam Kirby maybe has connections with Dance Fever's owners.
Is it weight? I think Adam Kirby's lowest widening rate in the last 12 months is 9 stone.
No, you're right. Yeah, no, you're absolutely spot on. You sold that. Yeah, Adam Kirby. And we've seen Adam Kirby, haven't we? How skinny and how tall he is. I think he's a fantastic rider, by the way. I was so delighted when he won the Derby, because I think I cannot stand it when people dismiss jockeys like Adam Kirby as being all weather jockeys. You know, it's utterly ridiculous. And the success that he's had with Clive Cox over the years in top races as well, you know, meetings like Royal Ascot. I think he's an extremely good rider. And I saw him the other day at Windsor, actually. I hadn't seen him since the Derby. And I said, well done, Adam. I'm so pleased for you that you won that race, because I think he gave it a great ride.
Oh, yeah.
And he's, you know, he's so modest about it. He's all, thanks very much. You know, as if it was kind of almost embarrassing for him to accept the praise. And it shouldn't be, because he got that Derby spot on, didn't he? And he was daring. He took a chance going for the rail halfway up the home straight, and it paid off. Maybe if he'd got stuck behind, we wouldn't be having the conversation we are now. But he went for it, and that's all that matters.
But the other thing is, as well, that he'd been jocked off another horse in favour of, was it Frankie again? Mm. Was it another Frankie Dettori story where a jockey gets jocked off in favour of Frankie and revenge? Because Tom Marquand finished second in the Derby, didn't he? And Aaron Levine was third for Aidan behind Serpentine. That vintage renewal of the Derby that worked out so well with English King now playing his trade down under. Let's just forget that one, shall we?
I think that this year's Derby was significantly better than last year's Derby, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Significantly. But I got it badly wrong, because I thought that Adam Kirby rode the race to perfection and rode them all to sleep. And I was really taken aback when he won the King George and won it as easily as he did. I thought, I've read him badly wrong. So he's a special horse.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right, because of course he beat Mishriff, didn't he? Who didn't look bad at York last week, did he? So
it's all right, that horse. Fine.
And you could have said that at Epsom, that the winner liked the softish ground, that he was the one who acted on the track. He got the run of the race up the inside. But at Ascot, there was no fluke about that, was there? And I would say he's a seriously good horse, and he must be a player, surely, for the arc if he goes for it in the autumn, notwithstanding snowfall, of course.
Yeah, he can be a good second to snowfall. Yeah. It's all about snowfall. Come on!
But you are right about Adam Kirby, is that tall, skinny, great jockey, but he can't do any less than 9 stone. And so Aratus, 8 stone 7, David Egan is your man there. I'm going to go for Dance Fever, actually. I could actually see a Clive Cox 1-2 here with those. Escobar, I love Escobar. He's always there, isn't he? Those mile handicaps. He's always there. He's always at the back of the field at halfway, and he always comes charging through at the end like he did at York last week. But is he one of those that needs one of those enormous fields of handicappers going off extremely fast and is the seven furlongs here at the lower end of his ability, if you know what I mean, because it was a mile last week at York, and it was a mile at Goodwood before that, and he just didn't get there in time. But a strong pace sets him up nicely for one of his charging finishes. But is it going to come too late? I'd love to see him win, but I just don't think he's going to be quite good enough. And I think Clive Cox will have the 1-2 there.
I agree. I completely agree with you. I think Clive Cox has this race by the short and curlies. I don't think he bred, I think it was Peter Evans bred Escobar, but the late, great Pat Smullen and his lovely wife, Frances, purchased the horse at the Goff's November sale for $105,000 and sold him for $280,000. That's a nice piece of work there. And of course, he knows the stallion, or God rest him, knew the stallion famous name so well too. So I always get a bit emotional when I see Escobar. Kimmy Five has switched trainers. David Bridgewater now, and I see he's been very well supported too, with Nicola Curry on board. So, honourable mention for Kimmy Five, because Lucy Russell Hughes has talked the horse up on numerous occasions, including last time out when was 66-1 and backed into 40s behind Danya. Thankfully, I put up Danya on the podcast that day. just pointing that out there.
You mean Emmett Kennedy put that horse up?
Indeed.
When it did so well that day.
Indeed, yeah. Yes, that's right. That's right, Lee.
Emmett Kennedy.
Yeah. All right.
Furlong podcast maestro tipster.
By the way, thank you all for the support on Apple Podcasts. That was insane. That is bonkers. You're legends, each and every one of you. You're absolute legends. I'm with Artis for this award, but I think you're right. I think it's going to be a Clive Cox 1-2. And Dan's Fever should be taken very seriously, but I think Aratus is the one to be with there. The 3 o'clock is the Tote March Stakes Group 3 in memory of John Dunlop. Roger Varian has the favourite, and it's an odds-on favourite in Nagano with David Egan on board, 8-11. Dancing King from Mark Johnston and Joe Fanning, 7-2. Classic Lord for Usheen Murphy and Andrew Balding is 6s from 12s. And we've got two outsiders then, Frankie Dettori riding for Gavin Cromwell, who had a treble the other day in Ireland and is in tremendous form, White Pepper being the outsider of the field. So interesting that Gavin is sending over a horse who won last time out. What was your take on the 3 o'clock, the Tote March Stakes?
Well, Nagano has been in very good form just lately, hasn't he? And in fact, he would have won four in a row had he succeeded at Ascot. And actually, if you look at that Ascot race again, it was a handicap race. He was completely carved up in the home straight. He was actually staying on. I wouldn't say he was showing a blistering late turn of foot, but he I think he would have been in the places. And he was squeezed on both sides and crushed. And as a result, he could only finish sixth, but he wasn't far off the winner of that race that day. So even in defeat, he was quite impressive at Ascot. But I'm not going to get any plaudits, am I, for tipping what is potentially an odds-on favourite here. I thoroughly understand his chance there. Dancing King is very exposed, but certainly not out of it. Because in terms of ratings, he's more or less the same as Nagano. But there is one horse in here I think is very interesting, and that is Juan de Montalban.
Beautiful pronunciation.
Been practicing that all afternoon. Jewel, except when we were on the air during the Talksport program Racing Live, by the way, because that would have sounded utterly ridiculous, wouldn't it?
Randomly saying it.
He was with Andrew Balding, and then he went to Italy, and he actually finished second in the Italian Derby last time. And I know that Italian racing is not what it used to be, because we used to send runners, didn't we, over from Britain and Ireland to run in the Italian Derby, and used to think we'd done pretty well if we succeeded or placed there. Italian racing has been going through the doldrums a bit in recent times. It's still going, but the Italian Derby doesn't compare to the Irish Derby or the Derby at Epsom. But it wasn't a bad run. Now, he was only with the trainer for one run, and now he's come back to Britain, and he's with David O'Mara. And I think it's fascinating that he's taking him down this potential St. Ledger trial type route here. Mm. He must have been doing something at home, mustn't he? And on official ratings, again, he's the same. He's rated about 100, same as Dancing King and Nagano. So he might be overpriced. I don't think David O'Mara would have a pitch into a race like this, a Group 3, which is a known St. Leger trial, if he didn't think that the horse would run a good race. So although, yes, I get Nagano completely, but I'm intrigued by Juan de Montalban and we'll have to see. Having said I've mastered the pronunciation, I'm now pronouncing it in two completely different ways.
That's because you're hanging out with me too much, mate. You're getting affected by my pronunciation mix-ups. But no, I think that's a great shout. And the best price that can get you about Nagano is 10 to 11. I'm inclined to think that he can step up and grade no problem. The issue, I suppose, comes with whether or not you want to trust him over this trip. And Mark Johnson's won this race for the last 2 years, and he's won it with Saron Priestley, who unfortunately we're never going to see again. He has to be retired. And Subjectivist, who unfortunately we're never going to see again, has to be retired as well, as far as I know. But Dancing King, you made a great point. There's nothing between him and Nagano. There's officially a £1 difference between the two. Joe Fanning is back on board. He ran a fine race at Chester last time out. He was not far behind Yabir, who's backed that form up at York. And I liked him for this. I thought that he was very interesting, and he rattled off a hat-trick of wins. Being a typical Mark Johnston horse, he's been kept busy all season. But I thought as the 7-2 second favorite in a race where there is no each way betting, I thought he was solid enough that you could back him and just take a chance. But I'm not going to put anybody off Nagano. I think your selection is fascinating, particularly the fact that he went for one run in Italy, transfer trainer, and is now with David O'Mara. You know, didn't come back to Andrew Balding, and what that's all about.
Well, I'm thinking, was there something in that run in the Italian Derby that made the connections think this horse is actually pretty good, and we're not going to hang around in Italy trying to win races? We're going to go back to Britain and send him to. It's interesting he didn't go back to Andrew Balding, isn't it? He's gone to David O'Mara, so clearly there was some transfer of power in there somewhere or the other. But I suspect that he has been showing a bit, and I think he might go a bit under the radar. On your horse there, Dancing King, I'm seeing Joe Fanning and Mark Johnson, Goodwood. As we know, Mark Johnson loves having winners at Goodwood, and he comes down for the glorious meeting, the Qatar Festival, every year, and often runs horses twice in the space of a week, because you can tell he adores the track and he loves having winners there. But Joe Fanning, front running jockey, I can see Joe bouncing his horse out, trying to lead all the way, twisting around the downs, still in front, coming round down that final bend. And we know Joe is really hard to pass, isn't he? He just gets the fractions right every single time. And so, I love watching Joe riding because he's never particularly animated. He pushes gently, coaxes the horses into going faster without having to flail his whip all over the place. And I think he's a magic rider to watch. And when he's in front, and I think he and Goodwood go together particularly well. And of course, because of that turn down the hill into the straight at Goodwood, if anybody tries to get past him, they're forced, aren't they, out wider on that turn. Mm-hmm. And I know many years ago somebody said to me about horses that were in front at Goodwood on that bend, that the home straight at Goodwood is ever so slightly curved. It's not like Windsor, for example, a proper dogleg, or the Curragh, for example, the proper dogleg. But it's very hard to get past a front runner on the rails if the jockey has judged it right. And if Joe can do that tomorrow, I think it could be very interesting for Dancing King, especially on his trainer's favourite race course.
And bouncing out of stall three as well, and he's led. Yep. He has raced freely in the past, which would worry me. He was slowly into stride behind Kamari, but I suspect that they'll revert to making all, particularly in this small field. I have an explanation, by the way, as to why this horse is not with Andrew Balding anymore. It's because he sold him for €400,000.
Ah.
Cash money.
There you go.
Cash money.
There you go. So that explains everything, doesn't it? So he's done all right, hasn't he? The original connections have done okay, regardless of what happens to him after this.
Well, what's interesting is that Luigi Ravadda, he bought him, I presume, with the intention of running him in the Italian Derby, which he then did, and then subsequently sold him to Sheikh Abdullah Al-Mak Al-Aspa. I hope that I have not insulted your entire family, sir, with that pronunciation. And he's now bought him and sent him to David O'Mara. So, yeah.
Whatever. He's a good horse. He did well with Andrew Boarding. And you can't really knock second in the Italian Derby, can you? Even though it's not quite the same level as the Irish or the British. I never know what to call the Derby at Epsom, because if you say the Epsom Derby, people say, it's not the Epsom Derby.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
Ascot Gold Cup. You know, you can't say that. It's not the Ascot, it's the Gold Cup.
I actually had a gentleman come up to me from Ascot and say, excuse me, sir, when you were referring to the feature race of the week, would you mind referring to it, please, as the Gold Cup? You are permitted to say the Gold Cup at Ascot, but do not refer to it as the Ascot Gold Cup. It's simply not right. And wouldn't be
people
right.
People can be very sensitive
for the ITV viewers. I don't know if this guy actually worked for Ascot or not, but like, he was taking it deadly seriously. So I just went, okay, thanks very much. And my director was watching all this, and obviously was keeping an eye on everything else. And he was like, "You all right there?" It was like, some guy politely bollocked me, I think. And he just burst out laughing. This owner, by the way, the vast majority of his horses are in training with Richard Fahey. So interesting that he sent the horse to David O'Mara. The future master of Ballydoyle, according to the great scooper, Claude Duval, his last great scoop. Yes. He's going to be the master of Ballydoyle. Nope. No. So Dancing King.
I'm still waiting for that one.
Yes.
It may come true one day, but I think the chance of that is receding quite
rapidly. I think Dunica is in line for that job. Thanks for him. I think that's pretty much a done deal. Right. Mark Johnston for me with Dancing King, Roger Varian and Nagano. For Lee, which brings us to
Nagano for me, but with one eye on Juan de Montalban.
Oh, of course.
One eye on him. And I would be tempted to, you know, if he were around.
Let's
the
take
price
on the favorite.
At the moment, yeah.
Let's
go
take
on
the favorite.
Go Juan,
on.
It is.
Yeah.
Juan, go.
Drop him.
Juan, go.
Leave
Juan.
Him out of your play spot. Go. Go for it. The Celebration Mile. So Saeed Bin Saroor was talking to RTV today, and he said that Ben Battle will definitely come on for the run. The plan with Ben Battle, who you'll remember was sent to stud, he's still a full horse. Didn't quite work out for him in the old getting it up with the ladies thing.
In the old, yeah.
Yeah,
the undercarriage department.
Yeah, so, but the option is still there. He's still a full horse. You know, he might very well return. So Oisin Murphy has been booked by Saeed Bin Saroor. They've built up a very nice partnership together. And, but Saeed was at pains to stress that he will improve for this run. He might not have to, though. Be interesting to see what you think of this race. Parato, I thought, was interesting for Marcus Dragoning and Kieran Fallon. The 18s that was available a couple of weeks ago, gone, sevens now. Second favorite is Chindit for Richard Hannon. There were high hopes for him at the start of the season. He does have decent form to his name with Palace Pier and Poetic Flair, to be fair. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the Charlie Hills Jim Curley horse. Mustabek. There we go. That'll do.
That's the one.
And Parado. So it's Parado for me, I think. I think I'm probably going to side with the new bay from Marcus Tregoning and Kieran Fallon. But what about yourself, Lee?
Yeah. He's slightly disappointed me since he won at Ascot. But I do think that he's better than he's looked in his last couple of races. He's been okay, but I was expecting a little bit more, because that Britannia is such a competitive race, isn't it? It's one of the few races I've ever commentated on in the past where I was absolutely petrified of commentating. The only other race I can say that has scared me in the past but doesn't anymore is the Prix de l'Abbé at Longchamp, because
God.
If you ever go to the course, you'll know that it finishes somewhere over near the Eiffel Tower, which
it's
is
unreal.
Not that Yeah, it's seriously weird. But the Britannia is another one. I've come to terms with it now, and I'm all right on the Britannia now and the Prix de l'Abbé. But when I first commentated on the Britannia, I know it terrified me. And it's such a competitive race with potential improvers in it. I do expect the winner and the placed horses to actually turn out to be quite good. But yeah, so I think Perotto would have a chance. I think he has to make that next step up, though. Ben Battle, I think there are question marks about him now. He's 7 years old. I don't think he's needed a run in the past to bring him on, because he has run pretty well when fresh. And at his best, he may probably have won this. However, I do think Chindit is a very interesting runner here. They kept him at a very high level, haven't they? He won the Greenham at Newbury. And then he's been running in Group One company, and he's been running very well in it as well. He's not been beaten far. And I think he's just been lowered a bit here to a Group Two. And I don't think this is the best running of the Celebration Mile that I've ever seen either. So I think it's quite winnable for a genuine Group One horse to come in here. And against Ben Battle, against whom there are a few issues, as you say, he's coming back to racing now. He is, I think, a genuine Group Two horse. So he's happy at this kind of level, but I think Chindit, although he's not quite made it at Group One level, he has held his own very well. So I'm going to go for Chindit to beat Ben Battle, who has been a wonderful horse through the ages, and maybe there's still a bit more to come from him. But I'm going to go for Chindit. I think this is an ideal opportunity for him.
Yeah, he is a proper Group One performer, Ben Battle, but of course he has to carry the Group One penalty. He's carrying 9 stone 4. Yeah. Everything else is carrying. Well, the others are 3-year-olds, so there's that. So they're carrying 8 stone 12, whereas Happy Power, for example, is a 5-year-old, is carrying 9 stone 4. So it's more the age thing. The other horse that interested me and was on my list was Duke of Hazzard, for James Doyle and Paul and Oliver Cole, and I thought he could be an interesting each way play here. Sybin's Roar has a decent line into the form here, with the fact that he won only, was it a week ago, with Real World, who's a horse I think is very much on the up, and a horse I'm very excited about. And Duke of Hazzard ran a fine race that day to be third. And I thought he might be a horse that, if you wanted to go for an each-way option in the race with 1, 2, 3, he could be the one. Duke of Hazzard.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, I think so, because he runs against some extremely good horses, doesn't he? If you look back through his form, he's often running what you might think it was slightly out of his depth, and then he goes and runs third or maybe fourth, but the third would be good enough, wouldn't it? And he's the kind of horse I could say, you know, you get those horses where they're not really each way horses, they're more place horses.
Yes.
Because with an each-way horse, you've really got to think that it has a genuine chance of winning. But there are some where you think, no, it probably won't win. But I do think it's got a very good chance of being second, or in this case, say third, because I think that's probably all he can hope for. But I certainly wouldn't put you off him as a horse to get into the first three, because it seems to me that no matter what company he runs in, he's always got the potential to finish third. So good old Duke of Hazzard, we love him, don't we? He probably finished third in, you know, whatever race you ran him in. You could run him, you know, could drop him several grades and he'd still be third.
Oh yeah. So yeah, you could drop him into a class five at Lingfield, third.
Yeah, and he'd still be third.
Yeah, not a bother. No. So I think Parado is still my main selection, but I would give Duke of Hazzard some consideration as well. And I hope that Marcus Tregoning and Kieran Fallon can bring about the necessary improvement with him. This brings us to Beverly, my man, and an old favourite of the Final Furlong podcast, heads the market. Judicial, who, of course, loves this race. So this is the William Hill Beverly Bullet Sprint Stakes, the listed race for the speedsters, and it's going to be a fascinating renewal. Judicial has the market collared. He's won this race back in 2019. I think he ran a fine race in it last year as well, if my memory serves me correctly. Maybe it's failing me, I'm not entirely certain. But he has run at Beverly already this season, finishing third back in the 15th of June, and last time out was back in the winner's enclosure at Chester. Callum Rodriguez for Julie Camacho, 4-1. Dakota Gold is 5s. Hurricane Ivor, another bit of a favourite on the Final Furlong podcast for William Haggis and Tom Marquand, 13-2. And Tis Marvelous for Clive Cox and Paul Hannigan is 7s. So 3-year-olds are not from 14 in the Beverly Bullet. So he can knock out any 3-year-olds. So significantly, you're gone. And any others? There's Dandala. Bye-bye. Show yourself. Bye-bye. But what about Lee McKenzie? Who have you picked?
You know, a thing about statistics is that they're always there to be broken in the end, aren't they? And I wonder whether significantly might be the horse to do this.
You're back in significantly.
Well, he's drawn 3. I do like a horse on the curve at Beverly near the inside. And the fact that he's a front runner means that he'll stay out of trouble. Because you know, Beverly, because that is curved all the way, isn't it? Yeah. And I think this is going to be potentially an issue with Dakota Gold, who I think really is probably, taking everything into account, the best horse in the race, but he's drawn very wide. And significantly up in front, out of trouble, Dakota Gold will either have to wriggle his way through the pack or stay wide all the way, which is not a help in a sprint race. But there's often congestion at Beverly, isn't there, because of that curve, and horses get behind and then they try to switch out or try to maneuver in behind the other horses in front of them. And I think that significantly for me, he's got pole position here, and he's not far off the inside rail. So I'm gonna stick Maneka and say that sequence could be broken in this year's Beverly Bullet. And significantly, I think it's a decent sort of price for me. And I just think there's some of the other horses in there. They're good. You know, Judicial, you mentioned Dakota Gold, maybe an issue with the draw. Tis Marvelous, I think he'll run his race. Hurricane Ivor, he's very wide. Mm. I think there are potential issues about all the others. But of course, as we know, in a 5-furlong sprint, even a listed one rather than a notorious sprint handicap, it's all going to depend on who gets the breaks. But I think significantly he won't need those because he'll be up in front and hopefully he won't see another horse at any stage during the race.
I have to ask you then about another Final Furlong podcast favourite, which is Just Another Bottle. So this horse was, I'm trying to think, was he 50s when Rory put him up? And he became another Final Furlong podcast monstrous gamble. The idea that Rory had with this horse was that if they applied blinker, if the first time application of blinkers worked for him, his specific instructions were: this is not an each way bet; he is a win bet only, because he's either going to win this or he's going to bomb entirely. And he just burst out of the stalls, made all, and nothing got near him. Now he's coming out of stall one. Mm. And Kevin Stock could basically repeat those tactics here in a field size of 12. He is on Good to Firm, which it was good ground at Ripon. And he's 12s. Is he a horse that you would trust to back up that form? And possibly, just given the fact that he's coming out of stall one, could he burst out and make all and just be a little bit too hard to peg back?
He's certainly got the ideal draw, hasn't he? And of course, having mentioned significantly, there's a possibility that those two might end up running one another into the ground. Although the way Just Another Bottle won at Ripper, it was ridiculous, wasn't it? That's one of the most competitive handicap sprints of the season, and nothing looked like overhauling him from start to finish. And yeah, the blinkers seem to transform. They're classier opponents, because these, they're just a little step up from those sort of typical Saturday afternoon handicappers. Although, you know, the Greats at Wilfred is a cracking good race every year. And if he goes off in front as far as he did there, it's quite possible that nothing will get near him. And also that my selection significantly, I said I hoped he'd never see another horse from start to finish. He might actually see another horse's rear end, and it could be Just Another Bottle's disappearing over the horizon as significantly takes an honourable second place. But yeah, every reason. I don't think there's any problem too in sprinting with horses bridging that gap between good handicaps and going up a little step up the ladder. I mean, this is a listed race, but even into group threes and group twos, we've seen horses, haven't we, sprinters doing that time and time again over the years. Well, I think it's harder for horses over longer distances. So yes, he could do it. It is a case of whether the blinkers will work again, but at that the price you mentioned, did you say 11 to 1?
Yeah,
it's a gamble. He's 12. You know, if you're on Emmett Rippon, it's a gamble at that kind of price that you might be prepared to take, because until you've seen how he's going to run at Beverly, we just don't know. But if he does it again, you'd be kicking yourself, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Especially if you backed him at Rippon last time.
Yeah, and the point you make about the difference between handicaps and listed, even Group 3 company and sprinters, sprinters at Group 1 level keep beating one another. There's very little difference between the class of a sprinter at high-class handicap level, where you're on a rating of 96, and listed in Group 3 company. And there's no reason why you can't back it up. I don't think they would put him in here on the back of 2 weeks unless they thought he was capable of running a massive race. He's obviously been incredibly frustrating in the past. And it's entirely possible he sulks. It's entirely possible he just goes, nah, I've done it. And your horse significantly doesn't see another rival because Just Another Bottle just goes, can't be bothered today. Mm. But Judicial is probably my selection. In fact, he is. Yeah, let's nail that down. I'll go with Judicial to win this race for the second time, and it's significantly for Lee McKenzie. We have one more race to come the Final Furlong podcast. Before we do, we should tell you that there is live streaming available without even having to place a bet at tote.co.uk. All you have to do is just deposit money. So if you've already deposited money into your account, then you can watch as much racing as you want from the UK and Ireland for free on tote.co.uk. So if you don't have a subscription to Sky or to Racing TV, don't worry. Tote's got you covered. You can watch all the racing you want. Don't have to place a bet. Just have deposited into your account and there you go. You can watch as much racing as you want. Also, with Tote Plus, you are given a 10% bonus on top of the standard Tote dividend. It is an insane offer. They are giving you free money. 10% bigger than the standard Tote dividend. It is available only online at tote.co.uk, tote.ie, and the official Tote app. Get it now. Get the gravy as we approach our final race. And this one is taking us to Newmarket. It is the Close Brothers. They are good friends at Cheltenham. Close Brothers.
Indeed, yeah.
Close Brothers extended an invitation to us to go to their go into their VIP box at Cheltenham 1 year. And unfortunately, I was working. And with you, actually, and couldn't take them up on the offer. But thank you very much. And great to see them sponsoring the flat as well. So Close Brothers, Hopeful Stakes. It's a listed race, 2:45 at Newmarket. Again, live on Racing TV. The official going is good to firm, and the stalls are on the far side. Each way terms are 1, 2, 3. Summer Gand is in here. We've got a very short price favorite in Tabdeed for Owen Burrows, who's in tremendous form, according to Racing Post ratings. 100% runners to form is his current standing. And this horse is 15-8 with most firms. Godolphin and William Buick, Charlie Appleby, they've got Royal Crusade at 11-2. Chief of Chiefs for Charlie Fellows and Hayley Turner is 7s. And Hayley Turner currently leading the way in the Racing League, which you can hear live coverage of on TalkSport 2 on Thursday evenings in the company of Lizzie Kelly, who is a team manager, and the Talk Sport team manager, Rupert Bell, because we all know that Alan Brazil ain't done nothing. It's Rupert's done all the work. And literally, his commentary the other night was, "My job is safe! Yes!"
So. That was after the Team TalkSport horse won the last race, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think until then, Lizzie had been given plenty of opportunities to take the mick out of him about the way the TalkSport horses were running.
She said, and I quote, "Your time is done, old man."
But Rupert got his revenge later on.
Oh, and he indeed, got her.
Again, in this week's Racing League as well, because Lizzie's team is slipping down the table fast.
Yeah, and let's not even mention Team Ireland, by the way. Just like fire everybody involved with Team Ireland. It's a absolute disgrace.
Leaving it late.
No, it's just a pathetic. It's like, God, if you're gonna do it, do it. Like, you know, come on. Why the hell are we second last? You said to me today on air, you know, there's the potential that you'll finish last. There's not the potential. We will finish last. Ireland are good. It's second last
at the moment. You're being far too pessimistic, Emmett. They're second brutal. Last at the moment. They could finish third last or fourth last. But it's hardly worth a street party, is it? After you won the Grand National, every single race at Cheltenham, half of the classics, you probably were expecting a little bit better.
Yeah, just a little bit, mate. Just a little bit. Anyway, is Tab Deed a horse that we should be with, or is he a horse that we should be taking on?
I'd be with him. I think sometimes it's possible to overcomplicate a race. I think he's the best horse in this contest here. He's slightly down in grade, and I think he's got... Although his winning record is not great, is it? When you look at it, you know, he wins every now and then, but not as often as you might think for a horse of his ability. But I think he will win. I'll tell you the one that I another one that I am interested in, though, mm-hmm. although it's probably not quite his kind of race, and that's Samarkand. Never know whether you should pronounce the G or not.
There's been a big debate about this on the podcast in the past, but we'll go whatever you want to go with.
Okay, Samarkand.
There we go.
And I tipped him up on here for the Stewards' Cup last time.
Yep.
And because that's exactly his kind of race, isn't it? That and the Woking, these sorts of races, massive fields. And then he can begin his charge through in the closing stages. And this year, on paper, it looks disappointing because he was out of the place, well out of the places. But if you look at that race again, he was just starting to run on from a long way back and he ran straight into trouble about a furlong from home and couldn't sustain his run after that. And I do think that if the gaps had appeared at the right time, he would have finished much closer. I'm not saying he would have won, but I think he might have been in the first five or six, and who knows, five or six could be the first two or three. And if things go right, he has got a big finish in him, as we know, who knows what might happen. But I'm not using that as an excuse for defeat, but he was unlucky at Goodwood in terms of placing. But I think Tab Deed is going to be the one for me here. I do remember Samarkand earlier in the year, he beat Oxted.
Yeah, he did. I was just going to say.
On the King's Stand, didn't he, this year at Ascot? And he'd won the Jubilee race at Ascot the previous year. So he won the July Cup, didn't he? And July Cup. So
wasn't it the July Cup last year and he won the King's Stand this year?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
The July Cup this year.
Yes, that's right. You have got a good memory, haven't you?
Sometimes it can kick in.
So he is a genuine Group 1 horse, and I don't think he was at his best when Samarkand beat him at Newmarket earlier in the year, but that was a hot sprint. Emirati, what's it called? Anna is a fast sprint. He was third in that race, and Samarkand actually managed to beat both of those. So although I say he's the kind of horse who does really well in massive 30-runner sprints, handicap sprints, I think he showed himself in that race at Newmarket to be capable of a different type of performance. And I have seen him run extremely well under big weights, even on the all weather. So I wouldn't underestimate him. He could be very interesting at a good price. I'm going to go with Tab Deed, the obvious favourite, I think the best horse in the race. But Samarkand, I'd love to see him win. If only because I think he didn't get the chance to show what he can do at Goodwood last time.
Yeah, I'm in 100% agreement with you, actually. I think that the biggest danger to Tab Deed is Samarkand, whatever you want to go with. It's entirely up to you. And you are right, he does thrive in big fields, but he's also won and run very, very well in fields like this. This is a field of 10, so he has 9 in opposition to him. And that run at Linkfield, where he was taking on 12 runners, beating Oxted, he took on 7 last year. He showed some very smart form, got into the winner's enclosure when he beat Kimmy 5 at Goodwood, famously tipped up by Tom Bull on this very show at 22-1. Tom has that on his LinkedIn. It was so good. And he beat the famous George Bowen as well in a small field. So he's a very talented horse on his day when things fall right. The problem for him is that he's potentially taking on a really top-class horse here. But then again, the price is starting to go each time with Tab Deed. So it depends on what you want to do. You know, do you want to take the 15-8 and hope that holds or gets bigger and that you can take advantage with Tote Plus or, you know, whatever sportsbook is actually giving you guaranteed prices? or do you want to go with something each way, in which case Summer Gand is very hard to knock out of the first three. I'd find it extremely difficult to see a scenario where Summer Gand is not placed. So if we're doing something like an each way lucky 63 to send us to Dubai, then Summer Gand is probably the one I'd put in. But I think Tabdeed is the horse that's going to take all the beating. So
I think we almost completely agreed on that race there, didn't we? Which is a remarkable thing.
We did, you know. We did. Every now and again, there can be agreement. Lucy and I had agreement on a race as well. And she made a point of saying, you know, we don't always agree on races. But when we do, it sometimes works out. And it did work out, thankfully. What is your nap for Final Furlong podcast listeners, good sir?
I'm gonna go for Chindit in the 3:35 at Goodwood, the celebration mile. If Ben Bassel needs a run, good horse though he is, if he needs a run, and Chindit has been running extremely well in Group One level, I think tomorrow's race is absolutely perfect for him. So Chindit to win for Pat Dobbs and Richard Hammond.
It's Artis for me in the 2:25. The Tote Quad Pot starts here, handicap 2:25 at Goodwood. I was overly bullish about him at Newbury. I think my line to Rory was, how far does he win by? Which is why my line to you was, how far does he win by? So I think he'll win with David Egan on board for the weight. And I think that you've made a great shout with Chindit as well. I have to possibly reappraise that race, because the more I look at Chindit, 4.5 lengths off Puttick Flair, 5.5 lengths off Puttick Flair, 3 lengths off Palace Pier.
Yeah. They're not bad, those horses, are they?
They're all right. They're okay.
That was the basis on which I've gone for him, because although he's clearly not up to the same standard as Palace Pier and Poetic Flair, but the fact is he was considered good enough to run against them, and he wasn't beaten that far.
No.
And I don't think it's a great celebration mile either.
No, it's not. It certainly isn't. And Syed Bin Sarur. Syed Bin Sarur is one of the trainers I find to be, along with John Gosden and Aidan O'Brien, to be the most open with the media. And I remember him, he had two runners in the UAE 1000 Guineas trial, and one was odds on. And I remember him saying, no, it's the other filly we really like. We think she's a superstar. She's working like a monster. And she bolted up. The odds on favorite was well beaten, and his second string that he's told everyone, we think this horse is a superstar, she went on and won. And I think she went on to win the UAE 1000 Guineas itself as well. And for him to come out and say, look, he's going to improve for this. He's not telling you the horse isn't going to win. But when he says something like that, it just means that he's going to be vulnerable. And the three-year-old division are a very classy division this year. It's a very, very classy division. So Chindit has been keeping good company. This is a drop in grade for him. And I'm sure that Richard Hannon is anxious to get him back into the winner's enclosure. And by Wooden Bassett, you just know that Coolmore are going to have the tweet ready. Standing now at Coolmore Stud, Wooden Bassett, send your mare to us now after we paid however many millions to acquire him from the French last year. That is it. You're back on TalkSport 2 on Monday afternoon, my man.
Yeah. In fact, next week it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and we've got some jumping at Utoxeter and Sedgefield, and then you'll be joining me at Ascot, won't you, on Friday on TalkSport 2 next week. So looking forward to having you back on then, Emmett.
Excellent. Looking forward to that as well, my friend. Should be a lot of fun. And I'm sure we'll have plenty to discuss. There's a few hot topics knocking around, so I'm sure we'll have plenty to get stuck into. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that. No, it's a really good show, and I highly recommend it. It starts at 1 p.m. TalkSport 2, very easy to listen to. Just go to my Twitter, at Radio Emmett. You'll see links to it, and Lee does a brilliant job. Occasionally I present. Simon Holt has been on with us. Lucy's been on with us. Some star name guests as well. Aidan O'Brien, John Gosden, all the big guests on TalkSport 2. So check it out. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday next week, as Lee said, from 1 p.m. And I will be joining Lee on the Friday. Until then, Rory is back with us next week. Mike Cattermole is here with us on Monday as we review the weekend's action, and we'll also be getting involved in some of the hot topics in racing as well, and getting Mike's thoughts on the future of racing, some of the significant changes that have been introduced by the BHA, and crowds. Are we ever going to have crowds back in Ireland? My God! Oh, it's so frustrating! Jesus Christ! We just want to go to the Irish Champions Stakes. 40,000 people can rock up to the Croke Park. But oh no, you can't have 5,000 people on luscious land and vast expansive spaces at Leopardstown and the Curragh. No, you can't do that. Why? Because people dared not to wear face masks and hugged each other after Limerick won 3 in a row in the All-Ireland. Have I gone a bit mad? Maybe. Maybe I have, but it's also because I'm incredibly bloody frustrated and fed up with this whole thing. And for those of you who are thinking, but COVID, yes, I take it seriously. I'm double jabbed. I have the digital vaccination cert. I take it incredibly seriously. I think those people should have worn face masks. I think the GAA have responsibility to enforce rules on fans. They didn't do it. But that's not Irish Racing's fault, and we shouldn't be punished for it. But we are! Ugh! And with that bombshell, we're done,
Lee.
It
was great last week, by the way, Emma. It was great last week at York with 20,000 people there every day.
Stop it!
Oh, no, sorry. I've just made it worse, haven't I? Sorry.
Lucy coming on TalkSport. And the first thing she said was, I was so emotional yesterday. You know, when Mishriff came into the winner's enclosure, I just felt so emotional. And I'm like, oh, my God. Just because you had a large crowd there and you get to be on the race course. And meanwhile, we in Ireland are stuck. Stuck in our homes, I tell you. Ah, it's madness.
Right. You're feeling emotional, Emmett, just in a slightly different kind of way.
feeling emotional about this government. I'm about to go absolutely bananas. Yeah, and by the way, I would like to stress that this is not HRI's fault. This is out of their hands. You could make an argument that they could campaign a little bit stronger, but it's the government. The government are the ones who are implementing this. They're the ones who are doing this. And I have friends who their brothers and sisters are going into college for the first time. They're going to first year of college and they're being told that they actually are going in. I'll believe it when I see it. But anyway, that's Ireland for you. Meanwhile, in the UK, thousands of fans attending football and going to the races and having a great time. You know, they actually showed on Sky today a couple of blokes hugging, strolling along with pints in their hand. And I was like, you bastards. Typical Irish. You know, if there's a old saying in Ireland, if an American walks past a massive house, a big mansion, the American is most likely to say, wow, someday I'm going to live in a house like that. If an Irish person walks past a mansion, they're most likely to say, fucking bastard. And on that bombshell, we're done. Lee McKenzie, pleasure as always, my friend. Thank you so, so much for your company and expert yes. insight as well. Looking forward to landing the Lucky 63 and getting all that gravy.
Yeah, ditto, all those things that Emmett, and it's been lovely being on the program again. And this, we have got inspiration on TalkSport 2 since we started covering the racing back in 2016 from the Final Furlong podcast. So your influence goes into areas that you could only have dreamt about. And believe me, you are doing a great job. The podcast is doing a great job, and you are helping to create ideas amongst broadcasters all over the rest of the world. So well done.
That is an incredibly kind compliment, and the PayPal is on the way to you, sir. Mike Cattermole joins us Monday. You can hear myself and Lee together on Friday on TalkSport 2, and Rory is back on Thursday. Lucy here on Monday week. We'll chat to you very soon. Enjoy the weekend's racing, whether you can go or not. Just enjoy it. Take care. God bless.
The Final Furlong podcast is proudly brought to you by Toast. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Toast Plus at toast.co.uk.